Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Early Call Time. We have Nadav across the way.
Hi, everybody.
And Andrew over there.
Hi.
And we also have Eddie Pons.
Howdy.
Eddie Pons.
Eddie Pons.
He's short for Eduardo Pons Dominic.
Hey.
Whoa. First time.
Wow.
Kabuya.
Oh, I know Eddie. He is the current music editor on Scorpion. He also worked on Gossip Girl with me. And what other projects have you worked on in the past that you want to talk about today?
Oh my God, that I actually want to talk about? That's tricky. I've worked on a lot of Sean Ryan shows, which have been fun, with Rob Duncan as composer. And before that, I worked on a lot of Sean Cassidy shows, which was
fun. And you know, how you got your job on Scorpion, you know Nick Bradley.
I begged a lot.
Yeah.
Beat some people up.
Yeah.
Nice.
You hit without getting blacklisted?
You have to wear soft gloves.
Is it like a socks full of soap type of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
No,
fair
bruises.
Enough. As a music editor, what do you do as a music editor from day one?
Well, really, sit down with the producer director. We spot the show, which means we go through, decide where the music's going to go, and kind of talk about genre and feel so that the composer knows what direction to go. And after that, we go back and I produce spotting notes for the composer. We talk about how he's going to lay things out and kind of goes from there.
And you also, as a music editor, you also edit what we call needle drops as well.
Yeah. We.
What's a needle drop?
It's a song that's used in the show in a dramatic way.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Mm.
And
it scores.
It depends on the show. Some shows are different in terms of the way they approach that. Like on Gossip Girl, the producers were very hands-on and did a lot of the pre-spotting of those songs and choosing the songs and stuff like that.
Okay.
On other shows, I've, you know, chosen the songs, or I've at least lined up lots of the songs and edited the way, you know, that I thought they should be. And
so when we're talking about songs, you're talking about not score, but like, we want an Alice in Trains track. Alice in Trains, that's a band I'm going to start. Alice in Chains.
Alice in Trains is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking about songs as opposed to background score, instrumental. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. You did a wonderful job on that last song of the episode that airs tomorrow, which this is going to be...
aired last night.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
It depends when you're listening.
Yeah, but the episode, that I worked on recently.
Thank you. I'm always worried that the artist is going to hear it and go, "What? What did you do to my song?"
No, it was good.
Yeah, we're gonna have a viewing party here on Monday if you want to come.
Wow, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
So,
because I haven't seen the show enough.
Yeah. Exactly. So, as a music editor, you weren't always a music editor. Right.
No, I actually started off doing all sorts of strange things in the entertainment industry. I was an agent's assistant. I was a script reader. I worked for actors.
Yes, one actor that we briefly talked about before the podcast was Christopher Walken.
What?
Chris Walken.
Wait, the Christopher Walken?
The man.
Wow.
And you were
the one and only.
Were you his personal assistant or?
You know, I walked in. I was actually desperate for a job. This has nothing to do with Christopher. But I was in between jobs and I was looking for a job and I just was spreading my resume around town.
Okay.
And I walked into the production office, handed my resume to Amy Wells, who's now the production designer for Mad Men.
Oh, wow.
And she's like, I'll introduce you to the production coordinator. We need somebody right away to drive one of the actors around. And so they gave me the address, and they didn't tell me who it was right away. I think they were just trying to mess with me.
Right.
And I show up, and it's at the Chateau Marmont, and it's Christopher Walken.
How? You're like, hey,
did you just say hello?
I almost fainted. I'm a huge fan.
At what point in his career, I mean, when was this that...
Oh, I have no idea. He's done so much stuff. He'd already done some of the SNL stuff that's
okay.
Hysterical. And
okay.
I don't know if he had done the, what was it? The tambourine, the...
Right.
Cowbell.
More cowbell.
I don't know if he'd done more cowbell yet.
Yeah.
But I went up, and I think, I don't know if this is the first time I met him, but I remember going to the Chateau Marmont and picking him up, and he let me into the room. Beautiful view of Los Angeles, and he went, Eduardo. Welcome to New Babylon. I don't do a very good Christopher Walken impression, but you get the idea.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's exciting.
Where now was that with it was Communion, is that right? The movie Communion?
Yeah.
Which I remember watching.
You did not.
I did.
I didn't know anyone watched it.
It scared the shit out of me.
Oh, hysterical.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was younger, so it was, I think, I don't know what.
Oh, that's awesome. It was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And working on it was kind of creepy. Some strange things happened.
Really?
Really. Before I started working on it, actually, I was driving through Vegas, and I swear I hadn't been doing anything naughty.
Okay.
And I had an out-of-body experience while I was driving.
Whoa.
And I woke up the next morning at a gas station in the middle of the desert.
What?
What?
Not kidding.
Wow.
But I was safe. Nothing strange about my body. Everything was... You
know. Was everyone calling you Christopher Walken? Was it like a Freaky Friday type of deal?
No, but literally... Yeah. I literally started working on that show. I hate using the word literally, but whatever. I really did.
Yeah.
Like a week later. So it was very strange.
That is strange. Hmm. That is strange. Now, what else did you do on that show? I believe that you have a second credit for that, I think.
Did I really? Oh, I did a little piano thing, I think.
Okay.
Simple
and you,
gifts.
And you do some composing as well?
Yeah, I try to do some composing. That was originally the intent.
Yeah.
I went back and got my master's in music and, you know, specifically in media and writing and production at the University of Miami.
Oh, very
and
cool.
It's kind of like an emphasis on writing to picture and stuff like that. And then I came back here and I just figured anything that's music related, that's what I want to do. And I met a music editor friend, Carl Zittrer, and he took me under his wing, mainly because he heard I made good Cuban coffee.
It's very strong.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Tasty. And so he taught me everything he knew, and then I kind of took it from there.
Oh, that's very cool.
Where are you from originally? Are you from here? Did you move?
My parents are Cuban. I was born in Boston. I grew up in Texas. I went to school in Connecticut. I've lived in New York,
everywhere.
London.
So everywhere.
Kind of from all over. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm a wanderer.
How did you get connected? Like, how did you, I mean, how did you transition from, like, being, like, actor's assistant to actually getting into music?
That was mainly just, like, you know, hitting the street and calling everyone I knew and looking in the back of the Hollywood Reporter and, you know, stuff like that. But I wasn't that connected when I got out here, even though there were other people from school that were doing stuff. I wasn't really going in the direction that they were going. They were in development and production. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something different at the time. I mean, I originally wanted to be an actor, so I'm a very confused fellow.
Aren't we all?
But I shifted.
Well, do you find that music editing is also more of a consistent job than
Definitely.
Being an actor?
Or a composer.
Or a composer.
Yeah, the thing about the composing, which is a beautiful job, it's probably one of the toughest jobs I've ever seen done. And after I actually saw what it was, I wasn't so sure I wanted to do it because I enjoy music and I don't want to not enjoy it.
Right.
Because I'm being forced to do it all the time, 24 hours a day.
Sure, you have to write all these cues for...
Yeah, and these guys work so hard and they're so good at it and... But they never sleep and they never see anybody.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's hard.
Well, the turnarounds. I mean, I know for our show has been kind of stressful.
Nuts. Yeah, Tony Morales and Brian Tyler are doing the music for the show and they do an amazing job. But yeah, they're turning around like 35 minutes of score in 4 or 5 days.
That's crazy.
Insane.
Yeah. Is score ever recycled or is it all
Yeah, and that's part of my job also is to kind of help the composer pick stuff that they've ever used and kind of massage the stems and... you know, try to reuse some themes and stuff like that, or at least suggest stuff that they can reuse.
Mm-hmm.
And but they do write a lot of original music every week.
Yeah, and we try to use original stuff too to help out instead of, you know, putting all new, you know, score from XYZ movie as temp and then say, okay, well, go ahead, write something that's similar but not the same.
And the danger there is, you know, people fall in love with what they temp, and so you put in John Williams, and then the guy's like, I've got 4 synthesizers, I can't.
Right.
120 piece orchestra.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
Sorry. What is your relationship with the composer? Is it something like, all right, here's like all, you know, here are all the project files that you need, here's everything that you need, all like the sheets, and then you just hand it off? Or is it like you guys are in the same room, kind of like going over some things together? Or like, what's the relationship between music editor and composer?
You know, it's different depending on whether you're doing a feature or a TV show. I mean, there's a lot less personal interaction in the TV land just because of the schedules being so tight. But we do get together and we talk about, you know, how he wants to lay things out in the tracks. And the music editor, you know, in the past it was they ran the click on the scoring stage, and they figured out tempos, and you know, or at least helped to. And we do stuff like that, but it's a little bit different. And the composer, because he's working so fast, has a team, and a lot of times the assistants will help with some of that stuff now. So
right.
I can concentrate if I do, if there are scoring sessions, which is kind of rare in television. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll sit there and make sure I know which the best takes were, and you kind of supervise that. And
Do you work on a number of pilots as well, or do you like to work on pilots?
No, I don't like to work on pilots.
I don't think anybody likes to work on pilots.
I mean, it's exciting in some ways because you're helping to create the template for what the show is going to be, and that's exciting. But it's really, really difficult because everybody's under extreme pressure.
Right.
You know, including me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
of
it's
course.
Very difficult to please people, and they don't know exactly what they want, so you're searching for stuff. And
yeah. So. Do you, for... In the pilots that I've worked on with that have used a music editor extensively, they do a lot of the temp track for most of
it. Yeah, that's
right?
Definitely part of the job. And because of the tight schedules on television, you don't see that as much.
Right.
Or we'll do less than, you know, and the assistant editors
right.
get saddled with a lot of it, which is, you know, we're grateful for that.
Yeah.
But in features, yeah, I've built a lot of temp scores and... And it's kind of neat to see how the final score comes out, and they kind of follow what you know,
like,
the blueprint.
Yeah,
that's very cool. I mean, it's. I don't think a lot of people that, well, a lot of people that don't know post in general, they don't know that. Oh, there's someone else that edits the music as well. There's a picture editor. There's a sound effects editor. Oh well. Music has been part of that as well.
Yeah, even my mother had a hard time figuring out what I did.
Right.
Most of my family,
yeah,
they're not sure.
That's the hardest part about working in the industry is that if you're not like a I'm a filmmaker, or
a director.
Yeah, it's like writer. Well, then what exactly is a best boy?
Right. And is there a worst boy?
Are you the worst boy? Is that why?
It's very true.
What part in the process are you kind of brought in? Like, you know,
that can differ on project to project. Usually, 20 minutes before they're going to broadcast.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean they bring you in pretty late.
Yeah.
Music is usually an afterthought.
Yeah.
Which is strange because it's such a big part of the vibe of a show.
Right.
But sometimes you'll come in early and you'll help start getting an idea of what the show is going to be about and what kind of sound they want.
So, but for a show like Scorpion, at what point? Is it after picture is locked and then you're in, or are you looking at a script before it's
because
even shot,
our schedules? I mean, I'm particularly proud of the show that we just did.
Thank you.
And the last couple were very, very, very tight schedules.
Right.
So the composer wanted a spot very early on to a rough cut. And then we went through, I think, 4 cuts after that or something like that.
Yeah. I think it was the director's cut, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'll spot the show to that, but then I'll have to change the notes every time we do a new cut. And then I have to conform any cues that he's written to early picture. So conforming meaning taking it and making it work now that they cut out 4 frames here and 6 frames there and trying to make it sense rhythmically and thematically.
Right. Do you like go into the project file and move stuff around, or is it
Yeah, a lot.
Okay, so it's not like an assistant editor's point where it's like you're just taking the stereo track of everything all together.
No, I try to take all the stems and kind of work. You know, it's easier to make a new cue out of the pieces than it is to make it out of a complete mix.
Totally agree.
And I don't want to call the composer. I want him to be able to concentrate on writing stuff and not have to worry about stuff he's already written. So if I can, I try to fix the cue. And if I get stuck, I'll call him and say I need a layer here to help me.
Transition to it. And you primarily work in Pro Tools as well. Did you always work in Pro Tools as a music editor?
Actually, yes. But I mean, this is going to date me.
That's okay.
When I first started working and I worked with my mentor, he was actually using Sound Designer, which was like a stereo pair. You'd have to do that. Well, actually, he was still working on Mag.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we started using Pro Tools together. And kind of developed from there. But
was it an easy transition?
Yeah, because I'd used a program called Digital Performer, and I'd kind of been using MIDI software since it was first invented.
Right.
Since they invented the piano.
Right.
He scored with Beethoven.
Yes. We had a good relationship. He couldn't hear a thing I did.
Oh.
the initial MIDI settings are based off your settings.
That's it.
Yeah. He set the defaults.
Not quite, but I did have an old Mac. I think it was called the 128K.
Oh, really? Wow.
That's how much memory it had. You literally had to like switch discs every 5 seconds, you know?
So. Jeez Louise.
The future is now.
It is.
Yeah, welcome.
It definitely is. Do you have music assistants? Do you have people that work under you?
I have had people work with me, I like to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And never under me. But
yeah, what's the hierarchy of like the sound department?
In music department? You know, it depends on a feature. You could have a group of music editors, and usually there is a supervising music editor that kind of oversees stuff and decides who's going to work on what, breaks it up into acts or whatever, reels.
Gotcha.
For TV, occasionally, if I'm, you know, in between two shows or doing two shows at the same time or whatever, then you have somebody helping you out, and gotcha. You guys have to decide how you're going to break that up.
And do a lot of music editors work on multiple shows at a time, or is it usually?
I think they do when they get to a certain point. They become more in demand, and they do end up working on more shows. But I'm kind of getting to a point in my life where I don't want to do that, especially with a show like Scorpion that's very difficult. And time-consuming.
Right.
I'd rather concentrate on one thing at a time.
Makes total sense.
And it's probably going to be around for like 30 years. So
God bless you. It's from your mouth to God's ears.
It's very true. I know that with Gossip Girl, when we worked together, you worked on a number of shows. You worked on True Blood and what was the other?
Yeah, I did a season of True Blood, and I did some Sean Ryan shows, The Unit. Was that during that? I can't remember. Chicago Code, The Last Resort, a couple of things.
Yeah, he's got notes over there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that's like 4 or 5 pages.
So you starred on The Good Wife. Have to fire our research intern.
That's the wrong one.
Oh, Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
That was fun.
What was Salem like?
He's a funny guy. Nick Bakay. Yeah, very, very funny man.
Oh, we were going to ask about Tarzan.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have to?
Was that the animated series, or was it a live act?
This is a Sean Cassidy production, which was actually kind of fun.
Damn it. So you didn't get to work with Phil Collins?
But they did this kind of modern-day version of Tarzan. And, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah? Fair enough. As a music editor, you get to travel a lot as far as traveling from studio to studio.
That's about it.
Yeah.
I travel from my car and back.
Yeah. What studio do you like to work at mostly?
Oh,
I know
it's
a random question.
Who treats music right?
Well, there's so many good studios in town. I mean, from the very big places like Fox, the Newman Scoring Stage is amazing. Warner Brothers has the Eastwood Stage, which is beautiful. Capitol Records is always great because you're thinking, you know, Beatles, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's smaller places too, like Igloo Music, which is in Burbank. They're incredible. And, yeah, so there's a lot of...
I didn't know places like Capitol Records were doing music for TV and film.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was just bands and
Well, the number of scoring stages have been reduced over the years. I mean, there used to be one on the CBS Radford lot. I believe that's gone. Paramount had one, I think. Is that gone? I don't remember.
I'm not sure.
But
yeah, I wouldn't know.
Is it a stage that has to be like specially constructed for that purpose?
Basically, a recording studio that's big enough to hold an orchestra and still sound good.
Okay. So you couldn't use a sound stage, for instance, for something like that?
Not really, because you really need to have the walls configured a certain way and baffling and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
There's an interesting story about the Sony stage where they recorded Somewhere Over the Rainbow and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember actually watching John Williams conduct Jurassic Park 2, right? There's one of those.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Whoa.
Which was pretty astounding. No one knew I was there. I snuck in. But that stage was changed at some point, and they reconfigured it and modernized it, and it didn't have the sound that it did.
Oh.
You know? Mm-hmm. And people were upset about it, and so they put it back.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. So it didn't have like a warm sound or whatever sound that they were looking for?
I think it's now called the Streisand stage, but...
I've never been.
After Babs.
Yeah.
Babs. You never like wander in there and be like, is this where Crafty is? No, bro, get out of here.
Let's talk for 10 or 15 minutes about working on the, I believe it was an Oscar nominated film, Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice.
Oh, yeah, you had to bring that up.
What?
It's, It's highlighted, actually.
A little bit embarrassing.
I highlighted.
Is that embarrassing?
Well, you know,
that's the entire reason you're here.
You guys love that film?
Yeah. I do.
I'm pregnant. Okay.
Yeah. No, there were some amazing moments.
Message.
It's a little over the top. I am proud of one thing, which is I wrote the video game music that you hear when they play. You know, the game, the show called Gang Fighter, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
So some really tacky video music underneath that that I wrote.
That's awesome.
Well, there's a lot of music in that movie, too. I mean,
yes.
And you edited, hopefully, all of that.
I did. Yes. With Carl Zittra.
What were sessions like on that?
Do I have to remember that? I don't remember.
Does anyone remember those sessions?
Yeah,
was it that kind of situation?
All I remember is the strange hair on, was it Damon?
Yeah. It's a classic.
It is.
Homie, don't play that. Okay.
I was going to tell you how I knew you know, oh, yeah, something in common. Right. You worked as an NBC page.
I did.
See, I read your bio.
Did my homework. Creepy.
I started off in NBC daytime programming.
Did you?
In New York City.
Were you in New York?
30
then?
Rock, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked not too far away from SNL and Letterman
yeah.
and those things.
So were you a page or were you?
I wasn't a page. I worked in daytime programming and also casting for shows like Santa Barbara.
I was going to say soap operas, I bet.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I remember the audition for Robin Wright.
Oh, wow.
Who I, you know, later I was like, wow, that was Robin
Wright.
Yeah.
So that's when Letterman was at NBC?
I believe so.
Okay.
Late show, though.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been?
Yeah. I always remember that the intro where they fly up the mm-hmm. Rockefeller mm-hmm. Center. I always thought that was so cool.
What was it like working at 30 Rock? Because I had never, you know, I was a page out here.
You know, it was like a classic building. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Going into the lobby is amazing.
Right.
In the winter, every time during lunch, did you just go out ice skating a little bit?
No, but I did used to go over to the Museum of Modern Art and
oh, yeah.
that at lunch and
nice.
You know, break, kill some time.
Did you see folks from SNL walking around ever? I mean, that's the era.
Oh, yeah, that's during the good times.
I may have seen once or twice, probably blocked it out by now.
Yeah.
I think it was 400 years ago.
Right. SNL started.
I saw Chris Hardwick on the lot like 5 years ago. Still wow. told people about it. Yeah, JJ, you were there.
Yeah, he was getting a burger.
I was your guest. I was your plus one.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about starting a podcast, and then he stole the idea.
That's what it was.
Yeah, it's a little known fact.
Yeah, he stole our...
We were first.
Oh, no. Yeah, we were like, hey, we should call ourselves Nerdist.
Yeah.
And he heard that, and he's like, I got it.
It's true.
He's like, let me check if the domain's available.
He did okay.
Yeah.
He's doing all right, I guess.
Doing well.
I'll be hosting a show
He's
tonight.
Like a likable person.
He'll be one of your guests.
Seacrest, I think.
Maybe. I think it'd be really cool to have him on.
Yeah.
We're going to do a crossover episode where we're on his show and he's on our show at the same time.
At the same time.
We see what it's like to have 50,000 listeners or more. Yeah. And then he sees what it's like to have 20 listeners or less.
And how he figured out how to get paid for just talking about a show he likes watching.
Yeah, I don't get it.
That's yeah.
the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
It's the skinny tie.
Yeah.
It's the hair.
Yeah,
I remember him back on. Was it Singled Out?
Yeah,
Singled Out.
Yeah,
he was like a beach guy back then. I was intimidated by his stature, but I was also very small back then. Everyone intimidated.
Was he tall?
To me,
were you on Singled Out?
No,
oh.
I was just very.
He was
I was probably
me,
too young to watch it.
Probably.
Was it Jenny McCarthy that mm-hmm. was on
yep.
there too?
Yeah. And then in the last year was Carmen Electra. She came in and replaced Jenny.
Yep, that was great too. It was all great.
Andrew has a lot of. TV trivia. He knows a lot of
it. I worked with Pam Anderson.
Oh, really?
How was that? Oh, on
VIP.
That
was the first show I saw filming when I came to LA.
It's an ABC
no way.
Show?
They were shooting down at the pier in Santa Monica, and all the trailers and stuff were set up and all the signs. I was like, I've heard of that show.
Well, you mentioned how much I traveled, which is really not
yeah.
true. But
yeah.
On that show, actually, one time they were doing a show in Vegas. And so
they actually
flew us out to Vegas. And, you know, I don't remember what happened after that, but it was really...
Out-of-body experience.
Really nice of them to do that.
They flew you out to Vegas while they were shooting it?
For a spotting session.
To do music?
Interesting.
Awesome. Yeah.
Huh. Well, I guess for spotting, you sit there and you look for time codes and...
It's not that hard, yeah. You just need a video and they couldn't really leave the set and...
Right.
I guess that's...
Like, I'll go to Vegas.
It's a good excuse, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, to go to Vegas.
What's my stipend?
Yeah. They were very generous.
Yeah.
Very, very nice people, the producers on the show, which were Pam and J.F. Lawton.
Nice. That's really cool.
Good old Pamela.
As a music editor, Do you have any advice you can give to any other people that are trying to get into TV to edit music or compose or...
Don't do it! That's a good question. Well, I mean, you just have to get in there however you can.
Yeah.
And everybody gets in a different way, I think. Mm-hmm. But probably the best way is to get in with a composer as an assistant and slave away for many, many years until they let you write some cues, and then you write cues for years and years and years, and somehow you break out of that if you're lucky.
What's the normal time frame for someone that's assisting to actually start music editing? Is it five?
Yeah, I was just talking about composing for no good reason. The music editing...
Or composing.
I don't know. That changes, you know, from person to person. Just like there's assistants who will be assistant editors forever, and
it's like
nothing wrong with that.
Progression, like to go from music editor to composer.
That's different. Okay. Not a lot of people do that. Okay. There's been picture editors like John Ottman who've gone to composer, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there have been music editors that have gone to composing. And I guess to get to assistant from assistant music editor to a music editor, it's a matter of a couple of years, maybe. 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
Is learning Pro Tools like a must? That's just one of the things you got to know, or is it?
It's probably the most important thing I learned when I was getting my master's, and it had less to do with the actual program at the school, but they had an internship, and then I went to go work at a studio in North Miami, and they had a lot of hip hop artists there, and so I learned Pro Tools on my own there.
Okay.
And then so. Or actually, was it Pro Tools? Yeah, it was Pro Tools, even though when I got here, the guy was using Sound Designer. So,
But now that's kind of the program that's being used for music editing.
It's the standard, yeah. I mean, some people do use Nuendo. And I also know some other programs like Logic. But I don't find that particularly good to edit in. So
yeah,
Pro Tools is the best for that.
And with Pro Tools, I don't know if it's the same with other programs, but... We're in picture editing, we're dealing with 24 frames per second.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, 20 per second. But you can even go even farther than that.
Yeah,
you
we can work at the sample level.
Which is remarkable. But, I mean, you can change a cue by doing that.
Yeah, you can fix things that if you go into the waveform, you can go in and fix ticks and stuff like that by actually drawing them out, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So as part of that, though, are you extending sound? I mean, this is... Maybe a stupid question, but what exactly, when you're editing the music that's in there?
You know, I guess the analogy would be when you're using an actual piece of tape like they used to use, that you cut it with a razor blade and then you splice the two pieces together and put a piece of tape on top of it.
Right.
You're basically doing that.
The same thing.
That's the paradigm, and it really is kind of exactly the same thing.
And then you're kind of sweetening it so no one hears those little cuts.
Right, and you try to do it in a way where people can't hear.
Gotcha. So you're covering up all the mess that you've made.
Yeah, and a lot of times, I mean, you know, on shows, they'll temp in all the songs and everything like that, but they don't have time to really finesse it, or they've made a million picture changes while they're cutting the song.
Right,
yeah.
And they're just like, the heck with it, let the music editor deal with it. And so that's when I come in and I try to fix those. He's great at it.
Yeah.
But dealing with all the rhythmic weirdness and, you know, strange sound.
Forgot to lock that track while he was making all these cuts, so it's just like missing all these beats, cutting
out in the middle of a lyric, and switches over to something else.
Right.
Do you ever listen to stuff that you know you've been working on for a long time, and you just hear that the cut that you made, and it drives you crazy, or is that?
I try to spend so much time on these things and polish them so that I never feel that way.
But
of course, yeah, there are times when I'm like, oh, I could have done that better.
Yeah.
But I think that's in anybody who does anything in the entertainment industry feels like that about what they do.
So. Yeah, because it's like nobody could watch what they've worked on.
Right.
And no one else has any idea that it was ever there or ever happened.
Exactly. Like when you make something, all you see is the imperfections in it.
Do you guys edit this show?
Some.
Thank God.
Yeah.
We'll cut out most of your voice.
That's great. That's what I was hoping for.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Are you crazy? I just play stupid.
The f*** are you doing?
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
So this is a segment called Horror Stories. And what it is you get to tell us about times where either you witnessed a fuck up, you were part of a fuck up, you don't have to say any names, what show you were worked on, but just like, yeah, you know, so I was walking and then all of a sudden I saw a guy just dunk these hard drives in a fish tank. Like, I don't know, like something like that.
I think most of the horror stories for a music editor are, you know, being replaced for no good reason, or at least you don't think there's a good reason.
Okay.
And composers, it happens too. I mean,
oh, really?
Very, very important composers get replaced all the time, you know, because it's just not the vibe that the director's looking for or the producer. So, yeah, I mean, I think if I was going to say anything about horror stories, it would be just, you know, fear of being replaced. Or I did work on a horror movie director's. I can't say who he is. So.
Okay, that's fine.
Fair enough.
But he's famous and he makes lots of horror movies and he's very good at it.
Just okay. Look through these credits
too much
quick.
Too much info.
I might be getting into the too much info. Anyway, so we were putting together the score for it, and then we were running out of time. We had to do a screening. You know, sometimes you come in and you bring in producers or executives from the network or whatever to preview the music. And
okay.
We had a room full of people, and it turns out that, you know, I was going to have to mix the music live. And
Whoa. So
it was the sound effects guy, because they really hadn't laid in volumes and stuff like that. So right. We sat there and it was like a lot of music temped in from Bernard Herrmann, you know, from Psycho and God knows what else. And we just fought each other the whole time volume wise, and it got louder and louder and louder. And I think the director left the room eventually.
Well, that's
a good sign.
Wow, yeah.
Because he trusted you guys so much.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's why he left.
There was controversy over Interstellar for something very similar.
Yeah.
People were saying that the music was too hot.
Did you feel that?
I didn't either. When I was watching it, I was like, this is great.
I could hear the dialogue most of the time when I needed to.
Notes.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that, you know, Zimmer's score was really loud a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But it was kind of at appropriate moments, you know, when rocket ships are hurtling through space and stuff.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's a perfect moment.
Or going through a black hole or whatever it was they did.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's funny that happens more than just, you know, just then.
I mean, just
with Interstellar. But
is the horror movie that you're talking about Aquila and the Bee?
that had its own horror stories.
Yeah, that's what I flipped to. When I used to work at Starbucks, and we, for some reason, were selling that movie in the store.
I remember.
So they were playing it on a TV on loop for days and days and days.
Sorry,
and I just
that.
Remember going, the music editing on this movie is spectacular. Like, I'd be steaming milk and I'd have to stop just so I could listen. And I got fired.
Thanks.
That was his horse.
That was my horse.
For having good taste.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Nadovsky.
Uh-oh. You did work on Aquila and the Bee. That's
No, you just brought that out of nowhere. Yeah. One of his favorite movies.
No, it's like, dude, you have one of the most like diverse ranges in things that you've worked on. It's awesome.
You got to just work on whatever they offer you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a like specialty? You know, I'm really good at horror movies, and these are good at action movies, or just kind of...
Not really, not in music editing. I mean, I think you work on literally whatever you can get.
Okay.
Is there something that you really bite down on and you're like, oh, fuck, it's another, like, you know, Frozen movie? Disney
here. I haven't done a lot of animation. I don't know if I've done any, actually. I would think that's really difficult.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think it's fun to do different things and to, you know, work on things that are completely different.
Right. Would you say that nurturing the relationships you have with APs or executive producers, is that a good thing to do as a music editor or in general?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are the people that hire you, those people?
Just executive producers. But the AP really has a lot of influence and the composer, obviously, you know, so most of the time I'm brought in with a composer that likes working with me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they get stuck with me.
It's right. Like, package
like Brian and Tony.
Scorpion people.
I thrust myself upon them. That didn't sound right.
No.
Nope. We'll fix it.
I didn't have to do that.
Yeah. We'll fix it in post.
Thanks. Just cut that.
We're going to sound edit that.
No. We're not going to take it out. We'll just add words.
Add some music?
Yeah.
We'll mask it. It'll be okay.
Bolero underneath.
maybe some Etol.
Etol, your favorite. His favorite tone.
Yeah.
Put some mooshes.
Do you play music?
Boom.
Do you?
I do.
I don't know why I said "do you" again. Like, I was impatient. Do you? Answer the question.
That's right. I think I've been redundant. Redundant a couple of times. A couple of times.
Got it.
Okay. What do you play? Anything in particular?
I've played the piano since I was a little boy.
Nice.
And I still love to do it. And I try to sit down every day and play.
That's cool.
As a music editor, I'm sure it's good to have a musical talent. I mean, just the fact that you can pick up the beats.
It's funny, when I first started doing it, people were like, you don't have to have any music background to do this. I'm like, really?
You have to have a rhythm.
Don't you?
I mean, I would imagine.
I would think
so. You have to have some sense of meter and tempo.
I mean, how do you do that? If you're trimming a section to where it's going to mess up the tempo of the piece, then are you then having to go through everything else and...
You try not to do that.
Adjust it. All right, that makes sense.
Or there's always time stretching. And,
okay.
It's true.
You know, you can pitch shift and time stretch and do all sorts of interesting things to make things work. You have to be careful not to do that in an obvious way, because if you do it too much, it's really obvious.
Right.
You trick people. Yeah, or you just pick a point where it makes sense that the tempo would change.
Okay.
Like in an action sequence, that's easier.
Yeah.
Because you're moving between fast and faster.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Very true.
Are you doing the same thing with when you said you're bringing in songs every once in a while, then you edit those around as well?
Yeah. Obviously, I like to edit as little as possible in a song because I want people to kind of experience. I think it's even the subliminal thing when it's playing in the background. If you hear an edit, it throws you off.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you want to do it in a place where it makes sense.
If it's a recognizable song, I'm sure it's...
Yeah, and especially meter. I mean, to me, if you go... Stick a bar of 3-3, 3-4.
Right.
3-3 would be really interesting.
Yeah.
A bar of 3-4 in the middle of a pop song, you know, that's 4-4, it's a little strange.
Yeah.
Right.
I will never do that then.
Don't do that.
I won't. Ever.
As far as music editing, the way I was always taught was you start with the beginning, obviously, and then work your way back into it.
This is interesting, because I've never known how... picture editors think of music editing.
Don't
you usually think about the ending, actually, and then work your way back?
Not always. Not always. A lot of people think that, I want to get this section to land on this part. Some people do that. Mm-hmm. But the way I... actually, Rachel from Gospel Girl...
Yeah, she's great.
She and Mark basically taught me how to cut music.
Cool.
And they start with the beginning and then work their way back. So if you need to trim out music, let's say you need to trim off, you know, 10 seconds, you try to get it within, let's say, a measure.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever that, like every 8 beats, you try to trim those sections out until you can get it to...
See, that's why that show works so well, because you guys thought that way.
Right. Yeah. Because if you trim in the middle of a measure, people will feel the edit.
Exactly.
Which, it's funny because I thought the same thing as far as, as a picture editor, you don't really need to know about music. You don't need to know about timing. But the more editors I meet, the more I find that they have some kind of musical background.
Yeah, I do find that like the best picture editors actually are very musical, because they have a sense of rhythm and timing, and that's so important with picture. With pacing.
Right. So I think that's... I don't know. As far as a music editor, it makes sense, but as picture, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, let's just make it work.
It's so much better to work with somebody who thinks that way.
Right.
Because then when I get it, then it's just minor adjustments and, you know, I can work with it. But sometimes I get stuff that's just completely out to lunch and you're right. Like, I gotta rework it entirely. And then the director's like, but I love the way that used to hit. I want this to hit here, 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 here. And, you know, it's in 30 seconds. It's like, how are you going to do that?
Right, right.
So you got to pick your battles, I think.
You can't shift tone so quickly.
Right.
I know there's a lot of times in the stuff that I put in, I'm like, I wish it hit there and hit there and hit there. And then you play it and it's like, it doesn't do it, but it's the temp love that I have for the stuff. And
I think at those moments when you need to hit something like that, you just put in cowbell. That's what I learned from...
That's what you learned from
walking. Yeah. Full circle.
All cowbell. Like that was great. That was a great callback. Any more Christopher Walken stories?
From that time period? You know, it was a short time. I mean, I just worked on one feature with him. And he's a super, super guy. Really, really intelligent and funny and talented. And he would tap dance and stuff. He's
oh, wow.
He's something else.
No, he's well-versed. Well, I mean, that Fatboy Slim...
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. I had no idea that he was a dancer until I saw that. And then
that's how he started,
Did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I think I read Maybe he didn't. He probably didn't let you in on like his acting secrets, but maybe
well, I can't tell this, because they're secret.
I think I might have said this on the podcast before, but he would remember his lines like half a sentence at a time or a sentence at a time, which would cause all these natural breaks, which would cause the branded Christopher Walken talking style.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Okay.
I did watch him and I ran lines with him and stuff like that. And he what always did have.
What was that like?
Terrific. I mean, that's incredible. Yeah, I used to do that with Judd Hirsch too on a TV show.
Oh, really?
He would run lines and it was really fascinating to watch how they create the character and, you know, find their way through the text.
Oh, that's amazing.
So you worked on Taxi, that's what you're saying.
No, no. Not that old.
I just named the thing that I can immediately remember the person from. Judd Hirsch, Taxi, right?
Yeah. That was a fun time because there were lots of cool shows on the lot, at the Paramount lot at the time. Cheers and Baghdad Cafe, and which was Whoopi Goldberg. And so these people were walking around all the time. It was really fun.
That's awesome.
At the time when you're doing stuff like that, are you thinking, like, this is iconic? These people are, like, the stuff that they're doing right now is amazing. Or is
definitely
only
on
you
Cheers.
Look back?
I mean, you can't, like, not look at Ted Danson and go, what? Or, like, right. He shows up at the bar that you guys are having a drink with
you know,
at the end of the show. And
yeah.
There's Woody Harrelson.
Right.
You can't help
Why'd you leave that bar to come to this bar?
Yeah, why do you like this one?
Yeah. No one knows my name.
But then there are people that you don't know are going to become famous that are there too, which is
right.
Interesting. And I had a lot of those moments.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, where you call back and you're like, oh, whoa. Oh, yeah, you said that.
People who just hung out backstage or, you know, young folks looking to get started and become famous.
Do you get that vibe with the three of us in this room?
I do. Right, you know, now? I foresee major fame.
He just held up an envelope to his forehead.
Yeah, a Karnak. Wow. Fame or infamy, they're different, I think.
Amazing.
Well, Eddie, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
That was amazing. I actually learned a little bit about music editing, like from an assistant editor point of view.
No way.
I'm going to be less of a pain. Yeah, what you guys just did, cut on the measure.
Yeah.
Blew my mind.
Yeah, cut with the beat.
Yeah. We've been trying to get you on the show for a while now, and Christmas vacation got in the way, and so on and so forth.
All those parties.
All of them, and
we've
work.
We've got 37 episodes we need you to cut for us, so we're going to send those over to you.
Great. Yeah. I look forward to it.
Just been banking them.
Yeah. Well, early call timers, you can follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like us on Facebook.
You can even call us.
Yep.
Leave a voicemail or text.
On our Detroit number.
Yep.
267-225-CHAT.
267-225-CHAT.
2428.
I'm really happy you almost got that right.
I'll never get it right.
Probably.
Also, if you have any questions production-wise, you can email us earlycalltime@gmail.com. And are we going to throw to a letter right now?
Also, don't forget about our upcoming horror stories episode.
Yes.
Right.
If you have any horror stories, you don't have to put your name in them or
put them all blank. XXX. We'll fill in
whatever blanks. Discretion that you want us to have.
Fill in
we will
all your blanks with Amy Pascal.
Perfect.
Blame it on the leak. Email us earlycalltime@gmail.com with all your horror stories, any production questions, and thank you again, Eduardo Pons Dominic. Pons Dominic. There we go.
How did you say it?
I'm not sure.
Something
like that.
Are you on any social media that you want people knowing about? Or
I don't think anyone should know about those things.
Good.
No,
forget
I'm kidding.
Forget it.
I think it's, God, I don't even know. I'm on Twitter somewhere.
Yeah.
Look me up.
All right.
Cool.
Good enough. Yeah. And with that,
stay for another couple seconds and we'll be reading a letter.
We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
Long-time caller, first-time listener.
Hey, early call-timers.
All right, so this is
a nice pitch.
This is our letter segment.
Letters. We just got a letter.
We did get a letter.
Who's it from?
Do you want to know who it's from?
I do.
It's from someone named Dave
Dave.
We'll call him Dave.
Dave K?
We'll call him Dave K.
All right.
Dave
K. You know what?
No, we'll call him D. Katz. How about that?
D. Katz. I like it.
So his name is Dave Katz? Is that what you're saying?
Sorry, a little Simpsons joke there. Okay, so here David. Is the letter. Fuck, how am I going to do this? Okay. Hi, my name is Dave K. Hi, my name is D. Katz. I'm a photographer and filmmaker based in New York. I mostly shoot documentary and specifically adventure and expedition storytelling kind of stuff, but recently have gotten involved with a few shorts and features in the Big Apple, mostly as a gripper, AC, or camera assistant. I've been listening to a few of your podcasts after being recommended by a buddy of mine, who we'll call CC. Thank you, CC, for the shout-out to us. That's awesome.
Yeah.
He's
back
to the letter.
Word.
Really enjoying hearing all the different perspectives on the industry, although I have little to no ambition to come to LA permanently, it is still pretty fun to listen to. Well, that's a relief.
Yes.
Andrew hates LA, too.
Yeah, that's a good call.
That's cool.
Yeah. Stay put.
I heard a comment that I wanted to ask you about in episode 23 with Jimmy. You said that you know the guy who did the time lapse for Breaking Bad. Is that Dustin Farrell? Anyways, power to you all. I'm looking forward to hearing more episodes as I'm trapped in post on a no dialogue kind of deal so I can afford to listen to podcasts in the background. Word up, sincerely, Dave Katz. Dave, we don't care if
we
you
just
can
said
or
his name.
Can't. We've been saying his name throughout this whole entire thing.
Oh, have we? Okay.
Yeah.
Dave, there's no problem. I mean, you don't need to justify to us on whether you can or cannot listen to podcasts. We don't sign your paychecks, buddy.
It's true.
Yeah.
First off, I did check out his stuff, and it's solid.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's really cool. I mean, a little side note, Andrew and I are going to be trying to hike, because we don't know if we're going to do it.
We just don't have the permit yet.
Yeah, Mount Whitney.
You don't have the permit to hike?
Mount Whitney. You have to have a permit.
We've applied.
Yeah, we've applied to...
So you don't become part of Rainbow Road?
Is that an acid joke? I don't understand.
No, it's, I think it's on Mount Everest. There's like where a whole bunch of hikers have frozen to death.
Oh.
And you see their bright neon jumpsuits.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wonderful.
Rainbow Alley.
Oh, boy. I hope we're not like that.
Allegedly,
I hope
the coldest part of Everest.
I hope we don't freeze on this mountain. But
I don't think we will.
But it's more of the up the alley of what we're going to try to do. So I thought it was really cool.
Wait, what are you talking about?
His videos are like expedition videos.
Oh, nice.
And very, very cool stuff.
So have him tag along as a filmmaker? Is that what you're saying?
That would be sweet.
That would be sweet.
If he pays us $500 each, I agree to let him follow
work
us.
For free.
But to answer his question.
Do we know?
David, is it what
Dustin?
Is it? Dustin? I forget his name, but
Dave Katz,
Dustin Farrell. That's who he's asking if we know.
It is not him, but I've also looked at his stuff before, and it is amazing. It's time-lapse photography. He uses a slider with his photography.
Oh, nice!
Oh, that's such a great
and
combination.
It looks amazing, yeah. But it is not him. it's our friend Brian Bennett. He is a co-owner of Dynasty Films here in Los Angeles, and I think they have a. They have a satellite office in San Francisco as well.
Oh,
But that is our friend that is going to be hopefully on the show. We're trying to get him on. Wonderful dude. He has a lot of experience, and his stuff is also dynamite. Obviously, he was on Breaking Bad.
Maybe he could give us some tips on how to make our stuff look like Breaking Bad time lapses.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
He's up for that. He said anytime that. We have any questions, he would be happy to answer them.
So, perfect. Let's schedule them for next week.
Yeah. So hopefully that answers your question. and if you have any other questions, feel free to email us.
Yeah. You could email us over at earlycalltime@gmail.com.
Or you can call us and leave a voicemail at 267-225-CHAT.
Yeah.
What are great forms of communication.
Or you could Instagram us and write.
Oh, yeah. We have some more pictures.
Put a photo.
Check that now.
Yeah,
you could follow us on Facebook. You could tweet us. You could tweet at us.
Yeah.
And with that, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
And listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services, and you want more?
Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.